If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Captain!
Car here.
Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I'm told that we have a lot to get to on today's show, but I'm told that there was a rare package in the Shimoda P.O. box for The Greatest Discovery.
Yeah, there sure was. We have separate P.O. boxes for The Greatest Discovery, for Friendly Fire, and for...
We're not good with money.
I don't like the mail touching each other. It's the sort of arrangement I prefer on my dinner plate. I don't like my foods touching. I don't like my mail touching. But we have a manila envelope sent to us from our friends at HasLabs.
Oh.
And I think that might tip you off about what its contents may be.
So they sent us a beautiful gift that almost ended your marriage. For our other show, The Greatest Generation, they sent a rubber replica of Odo's bucket, like a one-to-one replica. That had a couple of pounds of dry oatmeal in it, right?
That is, yeah. I mean, that's the only way to describe it, Ben. It's a it's a rubber bucket with oatmeal in it. Yeah,
that almost ended your marriage.
That almost ended my marriage. Yeah, I keep it under my desk. It's under my desk right now. Even
does it have like a bin liner in it, and you throw like Band-Aid wrappers in and stuff?
It's big enough to use as a office garbage can. If I were to line it, that's not a bad idea.
Why don't you have your bucket and use it too?
Ben, it's our pal Josh Hazard from HasLabs. He signed this letter as your propman. So he's also the official propman for The Greatest Discovery.
Cool.
Message goes like this. Hey there, guys. It was fantastic to meet you at the Seattle Live Show, and I'm truly sorry if all that oatmeal caused any issues in Adam's marriage. It simply had to be done that way. Well, Josh, this is my camera. Josh, I'm going to look directly into the camera and tell you it could have been done a different way. I think so. I think we all know that. Back to the letter. It continues, however, when Short Trek Calypso came through and you started talking about all the dumb, obscure props you'd actually want, my ears perked up. I've got no idea if the official Rod Pocket prop makers could hook you up with what you wanted, but I sure as hell can. So please enjoy your unofficial Star Trek Discovery popcorn box.
Oh,
flat packed cool. For your convenience. So all you have to do is put it together and fill it with Vulcan Redenbacher popcorn. Stay just a little bit embarrassed, your prop man Josh Hazard. And sure as shit, Josh has included a screen perfect USS Discovery popcorn bucket.
Wow.
Oh, it
I
is.
I know what you're going to be eating your snacks out of when season 2 premieres.
Yeah, no shit.
That's great.
It's so nice. I don't know if I would ever put greasy, buttery popcorn in it. Like, it's great.
Wow.
It's so cool. Thank you so much, Josh. Also included is a HasLabs bumper sticker that says, "Stand back. I have an idea, which is pretty great.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Thank you so much, Josh. I look forward to receiving the Star Trek Discovery pillowcase in a in a future package.
With drool pre-applied?
Oh, God, it would be like that if it were screen accurate, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I do not want that. Do not want.
Tilly drool. Or maybe it would come with like a bottle of Tilly drool and you could add it yourself.
Hey, Mary Wiseman, will you sign my Tilly drool? It's a great way to get yourself kicked out of a convention.
Yeah, with cause. Hey, speaking of season two, the trailer for the new season is out. I guess what we had before was a teaser. Now we have a full 2 minutes of trailer.
Yeah.
And it shows quite a bit more. No longer is there any speculation as to whether Ash Tyler will be in the new series, which didn't seem like a foregone conclusion at the end of the last one, but I would have been real disappointed to not have him there. So
Ash is looking very Mumford and Sons in this trailer. Yeah. He's really let it grow out.
Yeah, he's gotten even scruffier. He's leaned into the scruff.
I like the look. He's in a fight scene early on, too. It looks like he's training with Laurel.
Whoa.
Keeping his skills sharp.
Yeah. I wonder if he's training in his capacity as Voke.
I bet that's got to be part of it. So what do we learn from this trailer, you think?
I guess the main thing we learn is that Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
We learn that Spock smiles.
Right.
Although it's a pretty subtle smile. It's a appropriately subdued smile. There was a scene where Captain Pike is rattling off some things that Sex and 31 did that really gave me Chris Brenner flashbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Covert ops, threat assessment, interface, channel 90.
I'm Chris Brenner.
Yeah.
Brenner Information Systems. You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner.
Yeah, not too much entrepreneur in this episode.
No, it's a lot of disco.
Yeah. A lot of black goo also.
Yeah. I wonder if that's a Skin of Evil kind of goo.
Whoa. If season two features Armus, I am going to be super psyched about it.
Yeah, that would be pretty amazing. I would love to see Armus get the 2019 special effects treatment.
Is the Mount Armus a dank and vile company a thing that we could put on a t-shirt ever? Because that really kills at the live show. That was a good job by you.
Yeah, I don't hate that idea. I feel like it's probably sufficiently parodic to be its own original creative work.
You see shit that's way less of an edge case at Hot Topic.
That's true. Although I imagine a lot of the stuff at Hot Topic is licensed, right?
I don't know. I haven't been to a Hot Topic in a long time, Ben.
You're not hanging out at the mall these days?
Why don't you tell me next time you're in a Hot Topic? Do an audit of their t-shirts.
I feel like the one thing about this trailer that was pretty interesting to me is how little it's about Saru or Stamets or Tilly or...
Yeah.
Or, you know, any of the... Like, Michael Burnham is a main character. Captain Pike is a main character. Spock is a main character. And that's it. Like, everybody else appears as background actors in this trailer.
You could surmise that they might be B, C story types in it.
Right. Which, you know, I suppose continues a tradition that Discovery has had, which is that it is not especially interested in passing the baton around, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a season of TNG has, you know, five Picard episodes and three for everybody else that's in the main cast and a couple of just, you know, general interest episodes. Discovery was not interested in giving us an Aria episode or whatever.
No, yeah. We do see Emperor Georgiou a fair bit.
Yeah.
In this trailer.
Yeah, fighting crime in her black badge.
Potentially. Who knows what side she's on?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing about Section 31. It's like, is this even legal?
The worst kept secret in Starfleet is Section 31.
Yeah. But anyways, only looking forward to it more, and we will be kicking off our weekly coverage of Star Trek Discovery in mid-January.
Yeah, the second season starts Thursday, January 17th.
It's the day after our live show in San Francisco.
Yeah, how about that? And then we'll be back at you on Tuesday the 22nd with our season premiere of The Greatest Discovery.
Yeah. Get your friends signed up for when we kick that off. You know, I want to see those numbers pop when the season goes on.
They added a episode to the season, Ben, that does not impact a certain trip you and I had planned. So,
oh, that's good.
I think we're going to be okay.
Hey, let's just hope they don't keep adding episodes.
Good news, guys. 26 episodes.
Nice vacation. Shame if something happened to it.
No vacation?
This show is a dump.
Yeah. Yeah. So today's episode is going to be part two of a Greatest Discovery episode we kicked off a few weeks ago. It is about the Star Trek Discovery annual comic book that features Stamets.
Yeah, the backstory on Stamets.
This episode is the part two to the first part that we did. That's episode 32 of The Greatest Discovery, and it's called Big Dog in the Bar. If you haven't heard part one yet, go back and check that out, and then come back.
Stamets had just ingested some mycelium spores and is really tripping balls when we leave off. And to draw a bright line underneath that, the first page of this second half of the book, he is lying on the ground, but the drawing is upside down, so it looks like he's lying on the ceiling. His buddy finds him lying there. It's Justin Strahl, Adam. It's his buddy that we see him FaceTiming in season one of the show. They're the two genius researchers who are discovering all of the potential of the Stellivatory mushrooms. And Strahl is pretty scandalized that Stamets has gone on this wild trip, man.
And Stamets is not just chill out, Dad, about this. He's like, we both know that they're non-toxic. Like, so chill out, Dad.
Yeah. But also he says to himself, I'll eat every last spore before I see them on a Starfleet ship. So, you know, really really doubling down on his unwillingness to sell out to Starfleet. He wants to keep it punk rock and investigate the mycelial spores himself.
He's also kind of predicting the need for a greater and greater dose in order to feel anything. And I think that's that's kind of emblematic of an addiction behavior, Ben.
Yeah, you don't want to be stuck chasing the shroom.
It's a great, like, reintroduction to Culber. Culber's like his emergency contact. Like, whenever he gets into trouble, that's the name he put on the form. And so when looking for a second opinion about a drug you've ingested, who better to talk to? But Culber sees right through it. He sees it as a reason to reach out and maintain this relationship they have.
Yeah, and this sort of commences an LDR. It's sort of, we see over the course of months them doing FaceTime with each other as kind of a matter of course.
This is a half of the comic that does several time jumps.
Yeah, I mean, like, it seems like every page or two, the upper left corner is like how many months later it is. And the next page, in fact, is 3 months later, and they are doing some FaceTime with another lab, presumably on another planet, and they have like a furry little frog in a miniature frog-sized Spock box, and they use mycelial spores to make him appear in the other lab on the FaceTime.
I think it's... I mean... I think it's kind of fucked up that they used a live frog here. I mean, this is sort of like the Laika the dog situation, right? I thought they'd be better at this. Well, I thought they'd be better than this.
They did it with just like some kind of matter initially, right? And then presumably they have those like cylinders that Geordi is always like using in the transporter as test cases. And I imagine a couple of those materialized in the Spock box on the other side, a little like melty.
Mm.
But yeah, once they had it where they wanted it, they tried this froggy and it worked out great.
Mm.
I love this frog. I would love to see this frog appear in the show.
He's hairy.
Yeah. He's got kind of a, he's like a scruffy frog.
He's sort of like a indie rock Kermit.
Yeah. Kermit, if he kind of had like a John Roderick in the later years type of look.
I hurt myself today to see if I could feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
It's so dreamy.
Ben, I've never done a Kermit the Frog. I don't know if that was good. Hopefully that
was fucking tremendous.
Okay. Your Rolf is spectacular, so I felt I felt some nerves stepping up to that.
Oh, I think you did the biggest one and you did it the best.
Fun. Yeah, so they test the transporter, the spore transporter, on the frog. And guess what, Ben? It fucking works.
Yeah, and they're like, next step, let's reinvent the phone booth.
They're super pumped. They're pumped and scared, but mostly pumped.
The network is traversable. Bold face type, traversable.
That's how science people celebrate, using those $8 words.
So 6 months later, they've got a phone booth-sized Spock box built in the lab. And Strahl and Stamets are having a pretty heated argument about whether it's time to start doing the human trial of this. Doesn't seem like they have to get FDA approval or anything.
No, they're like shooting spores into the eyes of bunny rabbits just before this. Like,
yeah. The bunny rabbits are tripping balls.
Yeah. The eyes are transporting to other parts of the station.
To other bunny rabbits. They transport the eyes of a murdering bunny rabbit into a regular bunny rabbit, and it starts doing murders.
Oh, no. Along the way, there's a fair amount of interpersonal conflict. Justin is bringing a little bit of his personal life into work with the help of Stamets, who has like dragged that personal life into an argument in front of the gang. And you can't have this sort of argument in front of the lab assistants, right?
Right. That's just it's an inappropriate violation of the code, you know.
I'm on Justin Strahl's side here. What the fuck?
Stamets gets off the hook about being an asshole because he's brilliant in a way that I think is bad, you know. I don't think that that bad behavior can be tolerated just because. You know, like, that's the kind of thing that goes on Hollywood sets where, like, actors get away with being fucking nightmarish pricks to everybody because it's like, oh, they're so fucking brilliant and important.
I was just going to say that's not a problem that the future has solved.
Yeah, in this which case. Is too bad.
Yeah.
But Strahl and his wife's relationship is not going great, and Stamets kind of hurls that as an insult at him while they're arguing about doing human tests.
I mean, the idea that a spouse wouldn't understand the work that their husband is doing.
Yeah.
The reasons involved, no matter how stupid they may be.
Right.
I mean, I'm trying to understand it, but I think I can.
You identified with it a little bit.
Yeah.
Or you want to.
If I understood those issues, I could identify with that.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
What do you think about where Stamets keeps his TV relative to his bed?
It's
because if I was designing a room, I would put the flat screen like down toward the foot of the bed so I could like lie up in bed and watch the TV. I don't really have a bedroom that lends itself to having a TV in it, and I don't know if I would if I did or not. But Stamets has the TV like on the nightstand.
It's a terrible placement.
Like, what if you've got your night water there right in front of the TV and you're groping around in the dark and you knock the water on the television?
It's a Star Trek Craftmatic adjustable bed also. And also, Stamets sleeping on top of the sheets.
Well, that's canonical Trek, right? People don't put the covers over themselves anymore in Star Trek.
It's maddening. I don't understand it.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is primarily to establish that their relationship continues apace. And also, to give a little bit more dimensionality to Stamets' bias against Starfleet. Like, it kind of reminds me of David in Wrath of Khan. You know, he kind of thinks of Starfleet as being the military and, like, really deeply distrusts it and doesn't want them to get their hands on the technology that he's working on.
That is a great call. Yeah, this time period seems rich with people with anti-Starfleet sentiment.
Interesting to see. Stamets gets called away to the lab. There's an emergency down there, and sure enough, one of the lab assistants took a little bit of initiative and treated himself like a test cylinder for the transporter, climbed into the Spock box, and came out a crispy critter.
It was Charlie. He was the same guy who interrupted the argument that they had. Poor Charlie.
Poor Charlie.
This is why you don't argue in front of the lab assistants. They take it too hard.
Was your understanding that Strahl was there when he did it?
I mean, I guess someone had to hit the button. That goes uninterrogated, though, right?
So I'm really confused, because in the I guess it's page 31, the upper right panel is Strahl saying, "We warned him not to, but he was worried you two might split up, that you might close the lab," which doesn't seem like something Strahl would say, because he's either, like, the two pairs of people that could potentially split up are Strahl and Stamets or Strahl and his wife, right?
Right. I think the arrow at the bottom of the bubble is pointed in the wrong direction.
Yeah, is that a mistake?
I think it might be.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
You can't let a mistake like that through.
No.
You should be able to fix it, too.
Yeah, fix this. Fix it now.
Or maybe we're wrong, and we're just not understanding something.
I would probably bet on that one.
I'd be curious if people want to tweet at us or something and tell us if we're missing something here. But I reread this page three times, and I still don't feel like I get what's happening.
Yeah.
Seems like it must be a mistake.
So this death of a coworker affects Stamets-ly. Like, his coping is pretty strange. His grief process, fairly robotic.
He is very attracted to the math that this wasn't his fault in the slightest.
He also wants to use the death as a lesson in a way that I can kind of get with that. Like, not letting poor Charlie die in vain. There's some data there.
Yeah. I wondered about, like, medical ethics with this, because I know that it's like, it seems like it would be a little bit problematic to, you know, set a precedent that, like, oh yeah, we'll use the data of people that kill themselves for the science, and then, like, that has, like, a weird, you know, effect of, like, encouraging it or something.
Man, I mean, I've never got with that. I think once the tragedy is done, I think if there's anything to be learned from those situations to better the world, I think that's worth doing. I get that it's a little squishy, but...
Oh, fuck. Adam, I had an email here from the New York Times saying they wanted to offer you a job writing their ethics column in the Sunday magazine, and then they just replied and said they're withdrawing the offer.
Boy, that was my way out, wasn't it?
Adam comes to this job from his previous work as a Star Trek podcaster.
I think I would bring a great energy to the newsroom.
he does use that data, and he uses it to solve the puzzle. And it looks like he's going to kind of pull the same move that Charlie did and hop in the Spock box by himself and run the test. But Strahl, gets there and hears his logic, basically, that, like, this works or it doesn't, and if it doesn't, our research is over, and I don't want to be alive anyways, so...
I'm not right? laughing at that. I mean, I guess I'm laughing at that, taking it to 11 there in that brief yeah. moment, but wow, yeah. I mean,
that's basically what Stamets is saying here. He's saying, like, this is what I want to do, and if it doesn't work, like, go fucking be a husband again, you know?
I think Strahl agrees to this a little quick. Especially because he's got to be the one to hit the button, as far as I can tell.
It's like, this Stamets guy is really annoying me, so, like, one scenario, I take him out and I don't have to deal with him ever again, or the other scenario, we get, like, the Nobel Prize, and I'll probably be able to tolerate him a little bit better after that.
But the gamble pays off, and it works.
Yeah.
Stamets is transported from one box to another.
Good for Stamets. They take it back to the Federation Research Council on Alpha Centauri. This is a location we've seen before, that TED Talk place that they were in a few years ago, I guess, in the timeline of this story.
Is there a toad in the audience? As in, like, the Nintendo character? Because we see a shot of the stage from an area toward the back of the crowd, so we see a lot of backs of heads.
There is a toadstool head there in the
right?
lower right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Wow. Really caught my eye. Probably the slowest guy to get into and out of a seat, right?
They announce their results, and he just goes, ah!
Oh, man. This time, the presentation goes great, man.
Yeah.
Because, like, unlike people just screaming their questions from the crowd, they're greeted as positive figures in the aftermath. Starfleet comes a-calling again, and it feels like there's a lottery ticket potential here if they want to take him up on it.
Yeah.
I think Justin is the one who's the most optimistic because he's left Amelia... And he's looking to make a fresh start. We never see him go to the Glen at this point, but I think you can imagine.
No. What we do see is smash cut to airplane.
They're flying back from their meeting on Alpha Centauri.
I thought this was interesting since you and I have now taken several flights with each other, and you're a Windowman and I'm an Isleman, which works out great for us.
Would that hold up? Were you to take a space transport, would you still prefer the Isle? I kind of feel like you'd reverse course there.
I'd maybe take the window like the first time. But here's the truth, Adam, you know, I need to go pee. And I don't want to be crawling over people.
Yeah.
I don't want to make a nuisance of myself.
It looks like they're in Economy Plus there. Given the amount of leg room we're talking about.
A nice bit of leg room. And then Strahl, like, catches Stamets about to freeze all of the mushrooms in the garden.
Yeah, this is a thing that he perceives to be killing the spores at first.
Yeah. This is where we get to see Stamets kind of change his tune on the Starfleet thing. His thinking is basically, like, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. Like, if we do this research, Starfleet will eventually use the technology one way or the other. But if we're the people doing it at Starfleet, we could at least have a hand in guiding how it might get used.
Yeah. Sort of like people at the high levels of a certain government. You know,
right.
Like you want to stay... And stick that out, because in many ways you could be the last line of defense.
Right, and like if you resign, the person that they put in to replace you will probably be even more sycophantic and compromised than you are.
Right, yeah.
So you, it's not necessarily going to be popular with the base or whatever, but you like do the right thing for the greater good.
Pretty good evergreen comparison there, Ben.
Yeah. And I think the thing that persuades them is that Starfleet says that what they want it for is for propulsion. So
that kind of walks them off the ledge, right? Like from jump, they've always been like, they're going to weaponize it. Fuck that. We don't want it to get perverted in that way. But as soon as they hear that that's the use, I think they become far more open-minded.
Yeah. I loved that first scene with the Starfleet guy saying, we look for things to make us go.
Sound a little Kermit-y on that.
My voice cracked in a weird way that I think lended itself to it sounding Kermit-y, but then Kermit's voice doesn't really crack.
No.
I don't know why it came out that way. It was weird.
I thought it was a great effort.
Stamets is deploying to the USS Discovery, really walks on board with a ton of swagger. He's, given his bag to Ensign Hospitality, who wants to show him to his room, and he's like, no, Captain first. And we meet Lorca. It is established in these scenes that this is already M.U. Lorca,
right,
that he's meeting. You know, Stamets is very new to chain of command as an idea, which I think comports with the character that we meet in the show.
Yep.
And then he goes down to his quarters, and who should be there but the handsome Dr. Culber. He's gotten a transfer.
He used his medical override to break into his quarters, I guess. What's that about?
Yeah. More like make-out override. They just make right out.
You know, much like you are against the idea of a surprise party, it doesn't matter who's behind that door. If I'm expecting to be alone, that's not a 100% good thing.
That's a bit like surprise-free barbecue, where it's like, it's a good thing in theory, but if you just ate a peanut butter sandwich, it's a bummer.
I'm gonna set my cans down and walk away while you finish up your treatise.
My rant about surprise-free barbecue. You've heard it before.
Only every time we're together.
It's the only good metaphor I've ever come up with.
Ben, we get another time jump, this time a month into the future, and we're in engineering. And the last page of the comic is the arrival of one Sylvia Tilly. Who is as, like, the thing about Stamets is I kind of feel like if there were one person to beat the joy out of Tilly's personality, it would be him. Like, day after day, I could just see...
just being the grumpiest.
Him, like, wearing her down. And it's nice to see that, like, there was never a greater level of energy from Tilly that then got ground down into the version that we see in the Discovery program. Like, she's always been like this, and it's great.
It is great. She's established a little earlier on, or at least hinted at earlier on, like she's interested in coming and working for him before they're even in Starfleet, and he resists hiring her because she's a graduate of the Academy. But now that he's the big... swinging engineer dick on this ship, he can get the captain to let him pick his own staff, and Tilly is who he gets.
I think maybe the best depiction of Anthony Rapp is the very last frame in the entire comic book. Like, that is him.
Yeah, and it's him kind of looking chuffed that he's gotten the Tilly he was looking for.
Ben, I'm excited that you and I are going to be in an upcoming comic book.
Yeah.
Speaking of comic book versions of people who are real and how accurate those depictions may be, we saw a little bit of a glimpse of what we're going to look like, and we're pretty psyched about it.
A recent episode of Greatest Discovery, we had J.K. Woodward on, and he's a great comics artist, and he painted us as like some kind of officers that are accompanying Picard in something.
Yeah.
We get wasted.
Yeah, this is going to be in an upcoming Picard comic book. So it's probably going to be canon. We're going to be canonical Star Trek, Ben.
Yeah. And you know, once you get in, you're in.
Yeah.
You know, they hire these actors and bring them back all the time.
Like, maybe this is how we work our way up. Like, you got to start with the comics. And then you're a background actor.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're eating fortune cookies in the conference room of the disco.
I love the idea of getting hired as extras to just be in the background during a scene. There's some super tense scene where we're supposed to be standing at attention while Lorca and some other characters are having an argument. And we both just kind of like steal a fortune cookie while nobody's looking.
Those things are good.
Invented in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Where we'll be pretty soon for San Francisco Sketchfest. January 16th. Get your tickets now. GreatestGenCon.com.
Just like restaurant quality pivot right there, Ben. Did you like this comic?
I did. You know, it's an interesting kind of story. It's not really like a traditional, here is the problem that the hero must face and, you know, rising action and solution. You know, it is really a backstory. And it explains how the Stamets-Culber romance starts. It explains how the spore drive starts. It explains like how Tilly became an integral member of the engineering staff. But it doesn't seem like it's that cohesive as just a standalone story. So I think if you are rating it as just its own comic book, like in a vacuum, it probably isn't that interesting, but as a piece of ancillary media to the show, I really liked it.
Yeah, I would say that if Stamets is your favorite character, this is going to be more important to you than if he's just one of the many characters that you like on Discovery.
Right.
I think it's fun how it butts right up against the show.
Yep.
But I think I'm with you on the ultimate review, though. It is good and worth consuming as a fan of the show and of the characters, but I would say it's not a must read.
You know, and it's also a comic book. You can get away with some pretty different stuff in the context of a comic book, and I would have loved to see like a really explicit sex scene. You know?
Yeah.
Just the way I would have wanted to see a lot more Klingon dong in the Call of T'Kuvma series that
we
read.
Really, really give it to that frog before they send him off.
Yeah, that's where I'm headed with that.
Ben, one thing that gives it to us every episode is our Priority One message inbox. You want to see if we have anything in there?
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, we have a personal message here. It is from Mike Mock and Kristar Shrimp Kolgar. And I think we've met all of those people now, right?
Sure have.
And it's to Trigar. Also a person we have met a couple of times.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Message goes like this. On Wednesdays, we wear pink.
End communication.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Super fun.
Just a note for Trigar. W/R/T, the wardrobe choices from Wednesday.
Yeah, if you're going to be the second weirdest group of people that call themselves Friends of DeSoto, you got to exchange a weird communication every so often. I'll let you people guess what the first weirdest is.
Ben, our second Priority One message is for me. And it is
what?
And it is from the asshole who tweeted at Adam about the footprint insignia in episode 1. The message goes like this. Since I assume you blocked me immediately, I'll use a different forum to apologize for thinking you didn't get the point of the stupid insignia in episode 1. Sorry. I'm resolving to stop nerdsplaining in 2019, or at least to cut down. Keep up the awesome pod. Can't wait for Disco S2.
Yeah, you don't want to set yourself up for failure. Because if you say, I'm going to totally stop nerdsplaining, and then you do it once, you'll be like, well, I guess I'm back off the wagon.
This person is correct about being muted, by the way. anytime I am nerdsplained on Twitter, I mute the person attempting to do so. One way that this is made really easy is through the use of Twitter's many mute filters. I'll just go through a few with you right now, Ben.
Okay.
Here is what I have muted on Twitter. If you've attempted to use any of these words in a message towards me, I haven't seen them. Disappointing. Disappointed. You need to. You should have. Why didn't you?
Wow.
None of those are getting through.
Yeah.
So don't even try.
Nor should they.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really cleaned up Twitter for me in a pretty good way.
I don't think I've ever gotten a tweet that used the word or some variation of disappointed that wasn't concern trolling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't need that,
like,
shit.
Nobody is doing that to actually defend themselves. It's always like a hypothetical other person.
Hey, real talk though, I do appreciate the apology. This person did not leave who their Twitter handle was, so I have no way to unmute them and see if they've made better choices going forward, but I appreciate
it's not starting till 2019 that they're making the better choices.
Yeah, I appreciate the apology. I respect the willingness to be a better person, and definitely appreciate a priority one message on the greatest discovery. Ben, this the cutest, smallest of the Uxbridge Shimoda podcast empire, the show that needs probably the most support. So
yeah,
those who have submitted a priority one message are doing a ton of work to help keep the greatest discovery going. So thanks to them.
We sure appreciate it.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did, Adam. Of course, the drunk Shimoda is the character doing the silliest stuff in the episode. And I had to give it to Lorca. We get three panels with, I guess four panels technically, with Lorca in them in the entire comic book. the guy is, you know, he looms large over the entire first season of the show, so it's fun to have just a glancing scene with him in this. And it is fun how much Lorca he is. Like, Stamets was sold this job with the idea that he would really just get kind of unlimited resources and staff to do whatever the fuck he wanted, and immediately finds the reality to not be what that was sold to him as. And I just loved Lorca's suggestion that if he can't deal, he should unenlist.
I love it. All or nothing.
Yeah, like, we are two pages from having Stamets rationalize his way into agreeing to take the project to Starfleet. He's already being just kicked in the nuts by Lorca.
That's great. He's true to his character.
Yeah, yeah. It just made me laugh, and You know, Shimoda doesn't have to be that much like Jim Shimoda to get the award if he's making me laugh.
Right. Yeah, very true. Ben, I had a Shimoda selected, and then I changed my mind once you called attention to the terrible television placement that Stamets has in setting up his apartment. I think you have been injected with the Naked Now poison if you think that that TV facing the bed in profile is how you want to set up a bedroom.
Yeah.
Not good.
Unless he's like a side sleeper. He always sleeps on his left side.
But you can't be a side sleeper if you have the bed tilted up in a reclination style fashion, right? That's not comfortable. That's bad for your lower back.
And also, you don't want to watch the television with it like vertical relative to your head, right?
Right.
That's no fun.
It's insane.
The screen should be rotated 90 degrees if that's the case.
Stamets is a man of science. He should be uniquely interested in television resolution and placement.
Yeah. And he's always going and turning off the motion flow feature.
That's what makes him one of the greats, Ben.
Well, I don't think we have anything figured out for what our next episode is at this point, do we?
Oh, we sure do. We've got Short Treks number 4 is our next episode.
Oh, shit!
So look out for that. It's the return of Harry Mudd. So.
Right. That's our last off-season ep, right?
Yeah.
Then we're into the season.
Worked out pretty good, huh?
Man, I love it.
Yeah, then we're back to once a week.
So, looking forward to all of that. I think this episode comes out on Christmas Day, so from Greatest Discovery to you, happy holidays, whatever holiday you celebrate. Thanks for a great year.
Yeah, we really appreciate it as we look forward to giving you another great year of the Greatest Discovery. Pretty psyched to have new Star Trek once again, Ben.
Indeed. And we'll let Robs take it from here.
Thanks, Robs.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. And it's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of our show. And a nice free way to support the show is to head on over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. All right, thanks. We'll see you next time.
I'm Chris Brenner. Brenner Information Systems. You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
Yeah, Chris Brenner.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.